Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. You think New York is intense right now? You should see California. They have wildfires, a recall election for the governor, plus street homelessness much more extensive than here, and it's dividing the state. According to a June 2020 report, the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority counted an astonishing 66,436 people living unhoused across that one county, LA County, around a 13% increase from before the pandemic. And in one district, Council District 11 in LA, which includes Venice Beach, the figures were up by 40%. Few disagree that this is an emergency, but like in New York, there is vast disagreement on the solution. So what can New York learn from California? Joining me now to discuss the ongoing issue of homelessness in LA and other things California intense is Jamie Lowe, contributor to the New York Times Magazine and author of three books, including the forthcoming Breathing Fire, Female Inmate Firefighters on the Front Lines of California's Wildfire. She is bi-coastal in this respect, living here in Brooklyn, but maybe you saw her New York Times Magazine piece this weekend called Los Angeles Goes to War with Itself Over Homelessness. Thanks for coming on, Jamie. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Los Angeles Goes to War with Itself Over Homelessness. For listeners who haven't been to Los Angeles since before the pandemic, or maybe ever, can you paint a picture of the homelessness in LA and how it's similar to or different from what we have here in New York?
Sure. It is devastating. There's no other way to really describe homelessness and encampments that are unfolding throughout a really huge geographic area. And LA is different from New York in that sense that it is spread out over a large area, and New York is, you know, really condensed. And it's much more visible in Los Angeles because, and I think, you know, there is a right to shelter in New York, which means that a lot of the people who are unhoused can have a place to stay every night if they want to. The city is mandated from a 1979 law to actually provide that. But LA doesn't have that. So there are a lot more encampments. There are a lot more people who are unsheltered every night and living in encampments.
That's going to be news to a lot of New York listeners who think that the right to shelter is maybe more of a universal thing in the United States, or at least in other supposedly progressive states. But as you say, we have that legal right to shelter here after the old court case, Callahan versus Carey, former Governor Hugh Carey. California has no equivalent. So what do they do? Are there attempts to make housing a right in LA, or are there different attempts at housing that population? Or when we're talking about LA in particular, the weather is seen as so benign that, you know, outdoor encampments aren't seen as much as a threat to the unhoused people themselves. Or how do they approach it?
Sure. They approach it in many ways. Many are ineffective, and the weather is actually getting less and less benign as the climate crisis is, you know, colliding with the homelessness crisis. You know, being outside in what sometimes is 110 degree weather with air quality that's affected by wildfires can be an extreme health issue. And that's doubling down on all of the other issues that come with being unhoused, in terms of, you know, mental health issues, addiction issues, alcohol addiction issues. And I'm sorry, I'm like rambling, but basically I think that, what was the question again?
Well, that's okay. I forced you to ramble because I asked you a three-part question. But I know from your article that California's Governor Gavin Newsom recently proposed a $5 billion rent relief plan to prevent an immediate surge of unhoused people. So how is that supposed to work?
So that actually is not going to affect the numbers that you mentioned at the beginning of the show, which were, you know, that there were 66,000 unhoused people in LA County, 41,000 in LA City, 150,000 in California. That was all pre-pandemic. And this rent relief bill is going to help people from becoming evicted, basically. So it's people who couldn't pay rent for the past year and a half due to losing their jobs, due to less income, you know, that they just couldn't, that they were at risk, at very high risk, actually, of becoming unhoused. So there's still a crisis, the crisis that existed before the pandemic, and the rent relief bill is really to just address what happened in the year and a half past.
When COVID hit, officials stopped large-scale cleanups at most encampments in attempts to stop the spread of the virus, you report in your piece. How did that change the area? I guess you're looking at Venice, the Venice Beach area in particular, mm-hmm. but LA in general.
So I think the encampments really grew and they became much more entrenched because there was less, a lot of the sweeps that were happening prior to COVID, people would have to move their tents sometimes once, twice, three times a week. A lot of times those sweeps included throwing out IDs, essential information. They weren't always beneficial to people who are unhoused. And they didn't always, you know, clean up anything. Sometimes it just was that these populations had to move back and forth, and it was kind of ineffective. The sanitation sweeps stopped at the beginning of the pandemic because there was a lot of uncertainty about the spread. There was a lot of uncertainty about everything. I think that that meant that the encampments became much more established. You know, you had, especially within Venice, you had Third Ave, Hampton. There were pockets within Venice that kind of popped up, but there were less monitoring kind of groups that would come by and see what was happening. There were other people mm-hmm. and services that were going on, but the sweeps definitely kind of did alter the makeup of the encampments.
So listeners, maybe you read Jamie Lowe's New York Times Magazine article this weekend, LA goes to war with itself over homelessness. Any bi-coastal listeners want to compare the homelessness situation in New York and the homelessness situation in LA, and especially from a constructive standpoint, do we have anything to learn from each other on any coast? 646-435-7280. For Jamie Lowe, 646-435-7280, or you can tweet a question or a comment at Brian Lehrer. Jamie, the recall election of Governor Gavin Newsom, does it have anything
yes.
to do with homelessness?
You know, I think partly. I think homelessness is the probably biggest political issue in California, in LA County, in LA City. I mean, it's going from council members are being recalled. I think the sheriff, Alex Villanueva, is running on the homelessness issue in a pretty extreme way. And certainly it has something to do with Governor Newsom's recall. But I think that you can point to a lot of different issues with him in terms of why he's being recalled. And I think that partly is just that there's such a huge gulf between how people react to him within California.
What's the heart of it, if we can digress that much?
The heart of Governor Newsom. That's a really hard question to answer.
Well, the recall.
The recall. I mean, I think that it is... I mean, I personally think that it is a waste of resources and time because it means that he can't really govern. And I think that the effort is being led by extreme political views that he was not handling the pandemic correctly, that he was not handling the financial elements of California correctly. I mean, I can't really speak for why people want him to be gone. But homelessness is certainly a very big issue. I mean, he's done a lot of, he's made a lot of decisions about wildfire resources that are sort of suspect. There are a number of things that did not paint him in the best light.
And in the article, you wrote that the conflict over homelessness can't be separated from the gentrification that has transformed the area over the last two decades. That's certainly going to sound familiar to people in New York. Are the solutions, and this is really one of the reasons I wanted you on this New York show to talk about your article about L.A., is to ask if you think the two cities, and for you who I gather you live in Brooklyn, if your perception is that the two cities are going about trying to alleviate the problem of being unhoused in very different ways. Does the fact that New York has that right to shelter, which, you know, forces the debate, I think, into one over shelters or no shelters and what kinds of shelters and the Lucerne Hotel on the Upper West Side versus forcing right. people into, you know, congregate living facilities that may not be safe from COVID or anything else. That's a particularly New York conversation. And I wonder if they're having the conversation about what to do to both serve the unhoused people better and to serve the people of neighborhoods that feel plagued by so many unhoused people on the streets at the same time. Can you compare and contrast at all in that respect?
Sure. I mean, I think that ultimately the goal is housing for everyone. I think that, you know, one of the things that Mayor Garcetti mentioned, and it may just be a talking point, but he mentioned in our interview that there should be a right to shelter federally, that that should be a national issue, that everyone should have a right to shelter. And I think that that should be the goal, that housing and long-term housing is, and low-income, like long-term housing, that it needs to be built. It needs to be, it needs to exist. And I think that ultimately, you know, it's a matter of how do we make that happen, where that housing can exist, and where people can sort of live in the immediate crisis and then be transitioned into long-term spaces that are supported. Because it's not, you know, homelessness is not just an issue of not having a house. It's also mental health, physical health, addiction, alcohol addiction, and, you know, poverty issue. And ultimately, it's an income inequality issue. And so you have to be able to immediately, so you have to be able to do things simultaneously where you are solving the immediate issues with long-term issues in like being set in motion.
Let's take a phone call. Justin in Basking Ridge, you're on WNYC. With Jamie Lowe, who wrote the New York Times Magazine article this weekend, L.A. goes to war with itself over homelessness. Hi, Justin.
Good morning. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. But I, you know, having visited family members that live in Santa Monica, which is, I guess, part of L.A. County, you know, I can't help but wonder if part of it is has to do with the availability of services vis-a-vis actually who is problem it actually is to deal with, because I guess in New York, since everything is technically one city, whereas, you know, LA County has the whole patchwork of municipalities, so I wonder if that affects it in any way, and if the guest could speak sort of to that, and I'll take your response off air.
Thank you. Jamie?
Sure. So actually, famously, Santa Monica was referred to as the home of the homeless by Harry Shearer on KCRW on his show, his radio show, decades ago. And it used to have a severe homeless issue. I think because it is its own municipality, they can make decisions very quickly and effectively, but they also ship homeless off. Like I have heard advocates speak of this. I have seen the dividing line on the boardwalk where there is an encampment, and then it stops right at Santa Monica. And I've heard many times of people just being pushed to one side of that line. And that's happened, you know, in Culver City, Beverly Hills, that you don't, the encampments don't exist there because they're their own municipalities. But LA County does have the resources. There is money, there is services. It's just, it is a huge bureaucracy to try and actually figure out exactly what the best method is that is both humane and that is not involving a police force, which, you know, with the Echo Park relocation, which is a generous term, I think, there was an encampment that over the course of three nights, you know, the LAPD was, they were out there in like forcing people to move. And that was, I think, a very complicated, it was a bad way to move a pretty traumatized population, because you have people with guns, you know, forcing a population to move.
Victoria in West LA, you're on WNYC. Hello from New York, Victoria.
Good morning, everybody. Yeah, so I'm a bicoastal person. I've gone back. Good morning. Thank you for your comments. It's really enlightening. I'm a bicoastal person. I've been going back and forth between New York and LA throughout COVID, originally from LA, but now a New Yorker. And I try to tell my friends in New York about how much worse it appears homelessness on the streets. And they say, well, yes, of course, because the weather's better. And I explain it has nothing to do with the weather, but there's a different policy about it. And thank you for explaining what it is. And it is about the fact that homeless in New York are, by right, by law, are able to be housed. And here they are not. And what I see, and I live in the district, it's Councilman Mike Bona's district that we're talking about in terms of Venice, where I'm walking right now with recall signs all over, is the fact that there's really no good solutions, it seems. Everybody, you know, very liberal community who want to be very helpful and to this issue, knowing the how hard it is to find affordable housing. However, it also makes it unlivable for many of us. I can't walk my dogs and take my nephews to the parks anymore, because many are benign, but many are threatening. And many also even use firewood to have started fires in our wetlands here just to try to stay warm. And so I think it's real important that California do take a new position whereby they ensure that folks use these empty hotels or whatever to ensure that they get to have homes and houses, which will help everybody in the community, including the homeless and houseless themselves. And $100,000 trailers, which is what they provided to homeless across the parks at the beginning of COVID to keep them safe, did not work because they had rules about needing to be inside at 10 p.m. at night and no drugs and no alcohol. Well, you know, I don't think anybody would want to live by those rules.
Right. So easier said than done. So is there no political will in progressive California to set up a right to shelter system?
I don't know about that. I really don't know, but it's definitely not, it doesn't seem that way from our current elected officials here. I don't see why it would be so difficult when you've got New York as a model. And, you know, I'm sure I'm not the only one who goes back and forth between New York and California. And this is just over the course of many years, even before COVID, whereby you did not see, as much as you think you do, but in a very congested city like New York City, you do not see the number of homeless on the streets, even now with COVID and with so many jobless, as you do here. It's just quite unbelievable, and it looks like a lot of emerging market countries I've traveled to over the years. And you're wondering, how can one of the richest countries and cities in the world treat their people this way?
Victoria, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate it. And this is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Few minutes left with Jamie Lowe, who wrote the New York Times Magazine article this weekend that maybe you saw. LA goes to war with itself over homelessness. And we have a caller from Savannah, Georgia, Richard, who says he worked in L.A. City Hall in the past managing grants programs for homeless people. So, Richard, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hi, Brian. I love your show. I worked in City Hall for decades and managed budgets and also grant programs for a while. And it was my experience. Well, first, let me back up. I watched the homeless problem get worse and worse. It's shocking now when you drive down to any place around 6th Street and Central Avenue and those areas in downtown L.A., it looks like a third world, and they're right. But going back to some of my experience, I don't have a solution for the problem. I mean, there's growing wealth gaps that are increasing it, but there's just there's mental illness out on the street, and some of these people won't take homeless shelters if you give it to them. There are people with alcohol problems. There are people with drug problems. There are women and homeless mothers who are working paycheck to paycheck who can't put a roof over their head. So there's numerous problems in the grant programs that I was dealing with. They would provide single room occupancy shelters for these people. I don't know about the laws about providing a shelter, but I do know that there were a lot of dollars that were going out into a lot of different areas to help people with getting job skills or helping deal with mental problems or drug problems. It's just exploded, though. It's shocking. Downtown L.A., Venice, like you're talking about, some of these others, it's horrific. And we've got
what's your take as somebody who worked in that field in that city for a few decades? If you can boil it down to a radio soundbite, why did it get so much worse in the last few decades, even as the economy in general supposedly was doing fairly well?
Like I said, I don't have an answer, but I saw the growing wealth gap. You've got this anti-tax Proposition 13 mentality out there where people don't want to pay for anything. And it's just, I don't know. You know, minimum wages haven't gone up. And it's just, I think part of it is a wealth gap, but part of it is more complex than that.
Richard, thank you very much for your call. So Jamie, did you land on any solutions in the course of your reporting that anybody has come up with, or even your own novel insights? Do we need to close the wealth gap? Do we need to end the winner-take-all economy in the private sector in order to fight this on both coasts?
Yes, less billionaires in space would be one thing. I think that, Gary Blasey actually he's been involved in housing and homelessness in LA for about 40 years, maybe even longer, actually. And he basically just said, offer people something better than what they're experiencing, and that's how you solve the problem. So we need to figure out collectively, and we need to prioritize it to say, this is the solution. If you come here, this is how your life will improve, and this is how we're going to help you. This is something that we have to do communally. I think it has to have everyone's buy-in. It can't just be the government, because I don't see the effective, I don't see it happening on either a city, county, or state basis alone. But I think everyone needs to want to solve the problem, and they have to want to solve it in their own neighborhoods and have to find a way to, house their neighbors.
Jamie, before you go, your forthcoming book, Breathing Fire, Female Inmate Firefighters on the Front Lines of California's Wildfires, on incarcerated California women fighting the wildfires there. Very little awareness of that on the East Coast. Maybe you don't want to jump the gun before your book's release date, but do you want to give everybody a preview?
Sure. It's actually a book that was based on an article I wrote for the Times Magazine in 2017 about a woman who was incarcerated and died fighting a fire in Malibu. And I ended up kind of spending time with about 8 women and really trying to talk about their lives before incarceration, while they were incarcerated in county and state prisons, and then what it was like to be an incarcerated firefighter, and then how the program, you know, upon release, either failed them or really helped them. And in a lot of ways, it did help them. And in a lot of ways, it failed them in that they couldn't, you know, they were faced with the prospect of not being able to use their training and get jobs as firefighters, a lot of the women. And so it's about them, and it's sort of also about the history of, you know, prison labor in California and infrastructure and lots of stuff.
Do they force incarcerated women to be firefighters, or is it something that they on some level volunteer for?
So they use the word volunteer, CDCR, the correctional department. And so it's not by strict definition force. However, I would argue that the conditions in county jails and prisons are so devastating and so bad that the option to go to these programs, which are camps that are on the outside, that are in wooded areas, that have like way better food, that have a lot more quote unquote freedom, even though you're still a prisoner and treated like a prisoner, that option is, you know, a much better option. So it's a little bit of a survival choice. And I don't know that like force isn't the correct word, but volunteer isn't either.
Certainly raises questions about the definition of freedom and free will. Jamie Lowe, thanks for all your reporting, and thanks for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much, Brian. I really appreciate it.